Hi, today is February 4th, 2017. This is Mobile News Podcast number 193. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall, and our special guests this week are Frank McPherson and Sven Johansson, returning to us. And the theme for today is They Who Cannot Be Named. We're going to be talking about, well, you know, Amazon's Echo. We can't say that name. The one the iPhone uses starts with an S. We can't say that name. Google Home. What's the keyword for Google Home? I guess it's
same thing you use on your phone.
Okay, G. We'll call it OKGG. And
we did have a whole series of code names for these that we came up with about a month and a half ago, and we've forgotten all of them.
We've forgotten it. And Microsoft's Halo character, which I guess we could name this. Nobody uses it, so Cortana.
Hey, oh. I use it.
Really? Okay, we'll talk about that. Anyway, I did want to mention two sad things from Google. Thing number one, they are discontinuing the Google Now launcher, which I use every day. Thank you very much, Google. Because Google is the killer of products I use. And so it'll be discontinued. It doesn't mean you can't stop using it if you've got it on your phone, but you can't download it. And I don't know. I don't know if the Pixel launcher is going to become available or anything like that. But thing number two, speaking of things I can't do, is no more Android OS updates for my Nexus 6 after 7.1.1. Also, the Nexus 9 tablet folks are in the same boat. And that's not unexpected. Google typically only supports their devices for 2 years for updates, and then you're on your own. I don't know. You know, that's one of the problems to me with the Google's Android devices is you don't have any longevity. And you know, maybe not so bad for the phones. People tend to change their phones fairly frequently. But on the tablets, I remember I used my Apple II up until, last year when I got my Apple iPad Pro Junior 9.7-inch version. So I used it for, 4 years? And only now can it not get updates after 4 years, which I think is reasonable. But I don't know. Google, we need more than 2 years of software upgrades. How about three? Three would be doable, especially for tablets.
But hey, at least Google updated. I was just going to consult Todd by reminding him that Google Voice didn't get killed.
That's true. We did go through that whole thing last week, or Google Voice is still alive, so...
It's now zombie now, isn't it?
What's that?
Killed it. It's zombied, right? They killed it and brought it back to life.
Well, they didn't really kill it. They just sort of ignored it. You know, it was kind of passive abuse. But at least it's still alive, so I'm pretty happy. I know, Frank, you're an Android user, but you've got the new phone, right? Or newish phone. You've got like a 6P or something.
I get a 6P, yeah.
So you're good for another year.
Hopefully.
And unfortunately for me, I didn't buy my 6 until middle of its cycle. So, you know, and I don't really feel like buying a new Android phone right now. So I'm going to be on an old cycle until I get a new phone, maybe 2018. Or later this year. Maybe later this year. When the Pixel, whatever they call it, comes out. Okay, now before we get started on our main topic, They Who Cannot Be Named, I did want to ask my friends here for some technical help. So I just I just replaced my desktop PC. Now, I've had a Dell PC that I bought in the summer of 2008. I know what's wrong with it. I just didn't feel like fixing it anymore. So I bought a new inexpensive Acer T, I think it's called, model. It's quite nice. But my question is this. So I'm restoring all my photos and all that to it since my Dell died. And the question is, up until now, I've been using Microsoft SyncToy 2 to back up to external hard drives and Google Photos for, you know, for the cloud storage. So that still works. That's not a problem. Well, actually, I may have a problem with that too. So my question is, what do you guys do for local backups? So backing up to either a NAS or a USB-connected external hard drive or whatever. What do you back up to these days?
I use the tried and true old faithful rsync.
Oh, okay. because you're a Unix guy. Okay.
But you can use it. Bash. You should be able to use it on Windows 10 now.
Yeah, Bash has rsync, doesn't it? Wow. I didn't think of that. Okay, I'm going to scribble that down.
Okay, one for one. Now, the other options?
Well, I got, for stuff that's semi-important to me, I use OneDrive. And those things that I need just get sucked up there all the time.
Okay, so you just have one cloud backup.
Yeah. There's nothing all that important to me. I do have a NAS in here, and there's a program, Beyond Compare, is a file copy program that you can do quite a bit with, and it actually supports OneDrive now, so you can. It's a really nice. It's not a free one, but
that's fine.
I've been using it forever and ever.
Yeah, no, I don't mind paying for software. I mean, I'd rather not being cheap and all that, but I don't mind paying for something I use all the time.
Yeah, we use this a lot for, making a backup of something, and then when it does a good job of not excessively backing up. It tells you what's different. Mm. Especially if you carry around stuff on thumb drives and stuff. Take it somewhere and fix it. It'll tell you which one's newer and whatever.
Yeah, so that's a good thing about a Microsoft Sync Toy, which, hasn't been updated in years, but works fun.
Yeah.
Works fine, I should say. So, like Beyond Compare, I've been using it for years and years and years, and it just kept working, so I never had a reason to change it. But now it might get all confused now that, the source is going to be a new computer and all that. So, okay, I'm going to give that some thought. Anyway, I'm restoring all my files for my backup now. And since, SyncToy just does literally a copy, it checks to see if the file already exists, and if not, it copies it over. It's quite smart, just does a delta. But to restore, basically, I'm just copying it from the external hard drive. There's no special tool. It's pretty nice. Okay. All right. So back to our topic. So Sven kind of disappointed me because he usually buys everything under the sun, but he has not bought a Google.
Yeah, I have not. And I'm not sure why exactly. I kind of want one, but I've been spending so much time working with Alexa and Insteon and stuff. I've been adding more and more Insteon stuff into the house, so I can say turn on the bedroom light or turn off the main floor or stuff like that.
Right.
That actually takes more time than you think, and you got to kind of be an electrician to put these switches in.
And fortunately, you are an engineer, as I recall.
Yeah, that doesn't make me an electrician.
That's true. I learned that the hard way. Electrical engineers may not necessarily know how to actually do anything with wires.
That's right. Yeah. There's been a circuit breaker pop here and there.
It does remind me a little bit of the X10 system that I installed years ago in the house I was living in. And it was great. I had some really cool features, but no easy remote way to turn things on and off other than, I think I had a local web server running somewhere and a weird Perl script or something, but whatever. I do use that same usage scenario. In fact, the two personal assistants that I use, the one that Apple builds into their products and the one that Amazon builds into theirs, both of them control these little addressable outlets that I have around my apartment. So that is probably the primary use I have for the virtual assistants.
Yeah, so John hasn't bought a Google Home. I have not bought a Google Home. Thank goodness we have Frank here.
And there it is.
Yeah, I had to go out and buy my air freshener.
Yeah.
I found it during the holiday season at Walmart.
Really?
And yep. They've been selling them at Walmart and Target, Best Buy. The Walmart near me was the only one that had it locally.
Right.
When I was looking for it. So, went off one evening and went and bought it. So, I have the Echo and a Dot. I've had the Echo the longest. I picked that up in the fall of 2014 when they first announced them. So, actually, invested a fair amount of time in integrating my smart home Philips Hue lights and smart things and that type of stuff with the Echo. So I really wasn't that enthused about picking up Home. But it's not overly expensive, and it is an opportunity to get some exposure to the Google Assistant. So Basically, when I found it available locally, I decided to pick one up.
So how much is Google Home? So I think that Amazon Echo, the regular size one, is about $150 these days, maybe a little cheaper than that.
The Echo is $179.
Oh, is it still $179?
That last I looked earlier today on Amazon, it was okay. $179. Maybe the Dot. Yeah. The Dot is $50, I would imagine there's no real reason to get the full-size Echo anymore when you can just get a Dot and connect it to a good Bluetooth speaker if you really want to connect it to, you know, play music. Right. A lot of people, you know, it has a speaker.
Yes.
So, I mean,
one too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just asking it or you want to listen to news, stuff you listen to on a radio, it's plenty good. And it's plenty cheap, so you know I gotta imagine the sales of the full size device has gone down since they released the Dot. The Google Home goes for $129.
Oh, okay, so it's not cheap, but it's less expensive than the full size Echo.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I've got two of the Dots.
Yeah, I bought the Echo. Not quite as early as Frank or probably anybody else, because I didn't understand it when it first came out. But I bought the Echo about 2 years ago, I think, and really liked it. And I bought my daughter an Echo Dot last year, and I bought my mom an Echo Dot, so I put one in her house. My daughter especially loves it. I mean, she took it to her dorm and left one of her little speakers at home. I said, why are you leaving little speakers home? She says, the Echo Dot speaker's good enough. I said, oh, okay. So that, yeah. So I
really... But I think we touched on, you know, I think for most people, you know, when you look at either one of these devices, you know, when Amazon first released the Echo, what it really was a voice controllable speaker to be able to stream music from Amazon. And then they, you know, smartly added some features. I think once they added integration with the Philips Hue lights, which I think is the first home automation product that they interfaced with, and then expanded from there. You know, I think people started to see some more use or functionality from these. We all talked about the ones we use, and we all mentioned about how we have them working with our lights or something else in the home and provides a little more functionality. And I got to imagine for a lot of people, that's the case. And so the Google Home is able to work with right now with the Hue lights and SmartThings and of course the Chromecast. And the Chromecast is probably the main reason, the most useful thing, frankly, that I've seen with Google Home versus Echo, because I have Chromecast connected to a couple of my TVs, and it when you bring the Google Home and you set it up on your home network for the first time, it discovers the Chromecasts that are on. Obviously, they need to be turned on to be found on the network. And then you can, you know, basically indirect things like photos. I have one connected to my basement TV, and I just say, you know, show photos on basement TV, and it will display them. I can configure Netflix with it. Interestingly enough, Netflix is the only video service right now that integrates with Google Home. YouTube is not even integrated with Google Home. So
that is bizarre.
Yeah, well, I would imagine it's a little more challenging. With the Netflix side, you can actually say, you know, play Supergirl on basement TV,
right,
and it will start Netflix and go right to the show. Obviously, that, you know, there might be some stuff in the background on their side where they have a index or whatever to Netflix. The YouTube stuff might be a little more challenging since it's not quite so constrained. I don't know. It is surprising. They do have the YouTube Red music.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, that's the default music service when you first take it out of the box, and you get like a 6-month free subscription. But the video side is just Netflix.
Since it supports the music part of YouTube Red, does it also support the video, so the TV and movies that you can buy through Google Play?
Well, I don't see it as an option in Google on the Home app.
Interesting.
As a video service.
Boy, that's a really, that's a very odd hole. I mean, I, like you said, I can kind of understand maybe the complexities of YouTube, but Google's own video service, or not video, but you know, you can buy streaming video, movies, and TV shows through Google Play.
Google like Play. Music.
Yeah. Which I do. Is I have a Google Music subscription. And in fact, I think I mentioned it to John on this podcast a while back that last year I switched from my grandfathered $8 a month Google Music service to the $15 a month family plan. So I could buy videos that my daughter could watch. And interestingly enough, Frank, since you mentioned Supergirl, it's actually, I think, Supergirl and Flash I'm buying for her. And basically with the family plan, we can both stream the videos, you know, using the Google Video or Google Movies app, whatever it's called, an iPad, or you can just stream it right on your Mac if you have a Mac, but or whatever your PC. So I'm a little surprised you can't do that.
You know, one of the things that strikes me as we talk about these assistants, we talked a little bit about the prices and we talked about support and we talked about home automation being a big component that all of us like to do with these things. Mm-hmm. And I look at my home automation setup, the things that I'm buying work with pretty much every one of them. You know, these little outlets, mm-hmm. it's not in the manufacturer's best interest to say we only work with Apple or we only work with HomeKit, right. We only work with Google or we only work with Amazon. So in the next year or two, as these continue to take off, I really am wondering what is going to be done to try to differentiate them, because right now I don't see, if you're heavily invested in any one particular cloud, then yeah, you have an option, but I don't see anyone saying, you know what, I'm going to pass up the Echo Dot at $49 because I really want feature X in Google Home or something like that.
Yeah, so Frank, since you're the only one of us who has Google Home, I read through your article. And I kind of noticed some of the things you said. Well, this didn't quite work. That didn't quite work. Is there anything unique about Google Home that you would recommend to people instead of an Echo if somebody doesn't have anything?
If it doesn't have anything and you're starting from scratch, and I take that to include the fact that you do not have a Chromecast.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think right now the Echo is probably the better of these voice-assisted appliances. It's certainly more mature. Frankly, there isn't a real compelling item. The Google Assistant obviously is related to Google Search. So one of the things that the Assistant does with a Home is Google search, internet searches, right? Where Echo, you can ask it for information, but it's not tied directly into a search engine.
Hmm.
So there are some constraints there. And I would expect that the search side of things with Home are going to, you know, would probably get better a lot faster because, you know, of their pedigree in that area. I personally actually think that Assistant is the next generation of Google Search in the future. That's what we're going to have as opposed to the search web page. But, you know, that may be a few years down the line yet. The wild card in this, in the thing that I don't have is, since I don't have a Pixel phone, I don't have a phone with Assistant on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my understanding is there is some capabilities between Google Home and Pixel phones because they both have the Assistant running on them to be able to send information, to start something on the appliance and have it send, you know, directions or things like that to your phone. But since I don't have that Pixel, I can't see that for myself. And really, frankly, I don't know why Google could not provide that degree of integration even with Google Now and in the current generation of devices. I would be surprised that it's that dramatically different.
Yeah. Well,
Google is. See, now I'm wanting to get one because I do have a Pixel phone. The one thing I remember from, their announcement or their original was that if you've got more than one of the Google Homes, they do talk to each other, not out loud, but they know about each other, so that if you're closer to one, the one you're closest to that hears you best is the one that's going to respond. That's not the case with the Dot. If you're someplace where they both hear you, they will both respond. And they will both try to do what it is you said to do. And they'll both give you the weather, or they both tell you a joke or whatever. That's kind of interesting in that respect. If there's something like that happens with the Pixel and the Google Home, air freshener, that might be interesting. That might be a plus. The other thing is of the four different ones, and we've got all four of them in the house, the assistant with my Pixel, the Dot, the Siri, wife's got an iPhone, and I use Cortana and all the Windows stuff I got. Google does the best job, I think, of speech recognition and responding. Google does it. It tells me the answer to what I asked for. Siri tends to throw me up a web page with the stuff on it. Cortana does. Siri. Yeah, Cortana does a pretty good job of answering the question out loud if it's one that she can do. Alexa is not too bad. Yeah, she'll say.
The problem I have with Cortana is it. Very rarely understands me. I don't know if it's my accent or the timbre of my voice or is, but Cortana just doesn't understand me.
She does a pretty good job for me, just be me.
Cortana has heard all the nasty things you said about Microsoft.
This could be it.
No, you were talking about Sven, the Echo responding, and this week, my wife was playing with the Echo Dot and asked that particular assistant to sing her a song, and it sang this very charming little ditty called Raining in the Cloud. So I'm really wondering, maybe you don't know it, but maybe if you ask two Echoes to do it, they'll harmonize.
That could be. That would be interesting.
That's funny, because you mentioned that, because my daughter collects these Snoopy. Actually, I guess it's technically Peanuts, Snoopy, Charlie Brown, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. Ornaments, smart ornaments. And so you buy the ornaments individually. They're electronic. But if you turn them all on and have them play, they all play different instruments but the same song, synchronized.
Oh, cool.
That's
neat.
Yeah. So it's like a little band. So as you add more ornaments, your band gets larger. Anyway, going back to how smart Google Assistant is, I know one thing it can do is it can relate multiple part questions. So if you start asking about a historical figure, then you can refer to that person as him or her, and it'll know what you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. On the other hand, though, I noticed in Frank's blog about Google Home that one of the things it doesn't do is create a shopping list smartly, at least.
Yeah, well, again, it's an example of the lack of integration between the assistant and the prior generation Google Now and the current generation phones. So basically, what I found is that Google Home has a shopping list function. Basically, it's actually configured right in there, so you can tell Google to add a item to a shopping list. So, in this case, it's putting together a bulleted list, and it stores it in Google Keep. And the item it creates in Google Keep is actually titled Google Assistant Shopping List or Assistant Shopping List, one or the other. Mm-hmm. On my 6P, I create a shopping list on my phone, and actually, more often than not, that's, since I have my phone, it's portable, and I'm in the kitchen or something, and I want to add, milk or bread or whatever, and just say, okay, G, add milk to shopping list. Okay, it creates a shopping list entry in Keep that's called shopping list. There are two different items. So, there's a Google product called Keep that is in the middle, in two different Google products on the outside, Home and your phone, Google Now, and they aren't integrated in a you know, what anybody would consider to be a proper way. It's just, it is really kind of surprising that that you know, what you would think is kind of a minimal piece of work isn't there. So I would take that to mean that Home itself was probably put together fairly quickly. It the success of Echo caught, I think, a lot of people by surprise. I think in their rush to get things out the door, to get Home out the door, that they just, didn't spend the time tightening up some of these little pieces of integration that, I think somebody should expect. Because, again, I know that Pixel's new, it has the assistant, but there's an awful lot of people out there with older generation Android phones. And I don't think it's too much for us to expect Google to integrate their newer products, their software-based stuff, really, at the end of the day, with the prior generation of their software.
Well, Google's funny that way. I mean, people complain about the iPhone that, for example, the next model gets a fingerprint sensor and the last one didn't. They're kind of feel left out because now they got to wait to buy their new phone. But Google's really annoying because they have fragmentation at the software level, where, like you alluded to earlier, it seems like it's something they could fix. Why can't it work on a Nexus 6 or 6P if it works on a Pixel? It doesn't seem that hard, especially since most of it is probably in back-end server. It's not actually on the phone. Hard to figure. I wish Google would explain why they have such a hard time with software, since that's pretty much all they do.
Well, I don't think it's that different on the other systems either, because I can sit here and I can ask Cortana to start me a shopping list too. But is it in anything that Microsoft makes? No, it goes to Todoist or Wunderlist.
Yeah.
So I got to get another third program. I've been using OneNote my whole life. Why doesn't it go into OneNote? Microsoft owns that.
Well, Microsoft, their divisions don't talk to each other.
Well, the hard way. Yeah, that is true. But they're getting better. They're making division.
Speaking of the weirdness of things don't talk to each other, so Siri has been much maligned over the last year as not keeping up with her peers. Yet Apple opened up the Siri API. So I'm always shocked that there aren't more apps on my phone that are taking advantage of Siri, or at least advertising that they are. They actually might be. All I ever really ask Siri is to create reminders for me and to turn lights on and off. So
I don't even do that much.
Yeah, even when sort of there's a way for these two to talk to pretty much any developer, and the developer sort of plans that out, sometimes there's just baffling, why doesn't, for example, the program I use for a shopping list that syncs lists with my wife's phone is AnyList on iOS, and it's, why doesn't that have integration? Why isn't that screaming at me when I open it up going, hey, we now integrate with Siri?
Yeah, right. That's a hard one to figure. My only guess is that people have abandoned Siri, essentially. Siri really isn't... You don't really hear people using Siri in the real world. You don't really hear people using voice commands in the real world. By that I mean where there are multiple people present. I think voice recognition and these little personal AI, personal assistant type things, are things you do when you're mostly by yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is why I think that Google's strategy about that, though, makes a little more sense, because it isn't tied to just one input channel or one input model, right? If you look at where Google's trying to put Assistant in, they put it in with Allo. And I think the idea there is that in those opportunities in a text-based type of conversation with somebody or chatting, if there's a way to help pull it, to get assistance, if you will, at that exact point in time to be able to do that, I think for some very specific use cases that can make sense. The voice interaction is another, very specific use case where it's a lot easier to use when you're in the privacy of your own home or your home office or in your car or something. And but, you know, text-based, like Siri, you can't really use any other way but voice, where, you know, at least on Google Assistant or Home or Google Now prior, if I didn't want to use voice, I could type in the search box a command. You know, essentially it's voice input to Google Search or Now. And so I think the ability to handle multiple ways to have the same backend engine do all that makes a certain amount of sense, but there's a lot of polish and a lot of integration that they have yet to do.
Well, you know, that makes something, I never realized something until this very moment, and I kind of feel like I just had an epiphany. On my iPhone, I've noticed over the last 2-3 years, a lot of assistant-like features showing up. So things like when I go to an email form on a web page and there's a form fill at this email, the two options that pop up on my keyboard are my work email or my personal email. In messages, things like talking about going to a certain place and, you know, I paste the address in there, and then when I open up Maps, it's already in there ready for me if I want to choose it as a destination. So those are assistant-like things that the phone is doing, but I've never considered those a part of Siri. I've always thought of those as completely separate sort of things, whereas I think Google and Cortana and all these others are making it a bigger awareness to the user that, hey, all these features are part of this, or are part of Cortana, or are part of whatever. Whereas Apple just sort of tells you, yeah, that's the phone, and Siri is just voice.
Well, I think if Apple paid more attention to Siri, which I think is not very smart compared to, you know, in terms of what you can ask it, in terms of what you can ask the Echo, and it sounds like Google Home. And if they had some kind of Echo-like device that just sort of sat there, whatever you want to call it.
Apple TV?
Apple TV would work, except you'd have to work without
the need a microphone.
TV on.
Yeah,
right?
You need a microphone so you'd hear stuff there.
And it'd be always on. Mm-hmm. Which would be kind of scary, but
if you know how Alexa works, is she records, she just kind of sits there with 60 seconds worth of stuff going on, right, listening for her name.
Right.
Oh, a good thing about it is you can, and Frank knows this, I'm sure, is you can now use computer as one of the trigger words.
Mm-hmm.
That's a godsend, you know, because everybody has wanted to do that forever and ever.
Yeah,
computer.
But we touched on that. I think one of the issues that Apple has philosophically, right, because they've been setting themselves up as the privacy first company.
Yeah.
That, you know, that your information is a little more safe and secure with them, and so a lot of the things relative to Echo and now Google Home and Google Now prior to that is that kind of always listening. Some people translate that as a privacy concern, and there are probably some legitimate points to that. But when you are setting yourself up intentionally as kind of the counter to that, to try to have a product that ends up doing basically the same thing becomes a bit of a philosophical challenge. So, you know, I believe it's pretty much still the case, right, where most people start Siri by actually pressing and holding the home button on the phone.
Right.
I think there's, even if you do the voice input, does the phone have to actually be on before you do that? Or
No, the latest version, so on the iPhone 7, you can just say, hey, Siri, if that's enabled. It doesn't have to be on power. It doesn't have to be turned on. The iPhone 6, you had to be on power, on cable power to do Hey Siri.
So they're slowly having to open up, probably because of just competition, really.
Yeah. Well, here's a question. So all of us have at least two assistants that we're able to access. What do you use over the others? So for me, I just can't really think of too much because the lights are the thing that I use all the time, and both Siri and the Echo can do them. So there's nothing I think, oh, I need to go talk to the Echo about this. I can't talk to Siri about this or vice versa. So for everyone else, what are those tasks that you do regularly every day, every other day that you say, okay, I need to go to this one and not that one?
Well, because
for me, it's the Echo.
Yeah, me too.
It's sitting in between the family room and the kitchen. It's the egg timer. It's the lights. It's the stereo. It's, you know, it's
okay.
It's very convenient.
Right. And the difference between the Echo and the Home and everything else being, you know, Microsoft and Apple, is that because I assume the Home has similar microphone array as the Echo. That microphone array is amazing. It can hear me. I mean, I don't have a large home, but it can hear me 20, 25 feet away, no problem. And I don't have to yell at it. I can speak in a normal tone.
Which is really, I think, more so, and John, as opposed to one service being able to get better information or do things, I think it's more about what's available to you or what's nearby, right? If the device is nearby and can hear me, then I can just say Echo in whatever you need, right? So aside from using the Echo, and now I literally have my Home and Echo, you know, 2 feet from each other. So I could literally choose one over the other. And I do, you know, particularly now that the trigger word is the Star Trek trigger for Echo, you know, I'm amused myself with that, and just it's got the muscle memory there. But then I use Google Now on my phone. You know, if I have my phone with me and there is, you know, the convenience of a voice command for maybe a simple thing like starting a timer. And if it's with me, that's what I'm going to use. So It becomes a little bit of, you know, again, You use the camera, or in this case, the voice assistant that happens to be nearest to you.
So I'm going to ask go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, Frank, can you name your timers on Home? Can you say start the timer for potatoes, or is just timer one, timer two, or is
it just? I don't know, actually. I just start a timer. I've never started.
Never done second ones. Yeah, in the kitchen. In the kitchen, it's convenient sometimes to do multiples, and the dot just starts a timer whenever you say, and you can ask, you know, how much is left on the timer, and she'll say, you have 5 minutes left on one timer and 4 minutes left on another timer. Well, which one's which? It'd be great if you could name it. Mm-hmm. They should be able to do that.
So my question, this is going to sound like a rhetorical question, and it isn't, because I'm genuinely curious. Doesn't everyone kind of carry their phone near them in their house?
No.
Do you guys leave your phone somewhere and wander back to it at the end of the, you know, whenever you need it?
Yeah. I put mine down on a side table when I walk in the door on the charger, and then I don't touch it again unless I have to until the next time when I walk out of the house.
Okay.
I pretty much carry mine around with me.
Okay.
In the house.
I'm having to change that with a damn dual factor authentication crap. I'm upstairs. The phone is downstairs, and I do something and it says, we have sent a code to your phone. I hate that.
I am sorry that the world is getting more secure. If you would like, I will get a team of Russian hackers on call for you so that you can, you know, appreciate the two factor.
But I think, John, to the point that you might have been getting to of, you know, why couldn't the phone just basically be your assistant and you carry it around with you? I think that the thing the phone is lacking is that array microphone that Todd referred to. I mean, is, you know, I configured my 6P so it'll wake up even if it's off. But it, you know, unless it practically have to shout at the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, to actually get it to wake up. So if they put an array mic in this, and I don't know how hard that would be in a phone, that might make it better. I see.
Well, and I still don't think, I think the one thing we haven't elaborated on too much other than Todd mentioning is that I still think most people do not want to be seen in public talking to an inanimate object, even if it's a assistant of some kind. I think that's where if you're home and you're maybe the only one at home, you're okay talking to it. But that's, I think, where Apple really lost in this war so far and has been trailing is because they built it onto the phone, figuring people would talk to the phone anywhere they were, and found out that really that was only at home. And even then, they might not always have their phone with them.
Right.
I always thought that was kind of weird because so many people walk around with Bluetooth headsets, not as many as now as before, I think. But
people
talk to that all the time, and you can't tell whether you're talking to somebody on the other end of the phone or you're talking to your phone.
And actually, yeah. Sven, you just touched on what some people think may be Apple's next strategy with Siri, which is its relationship to the AirPods. My understanding is there's a much more tighter integration between Siri and the AirPods, and that could be Apple's kind of backdoor competition to the Echo or Google Home. Now, of course, the problem with the AirPods for a lot of people is just how you look wearing them and having to wear them all the time.
And also, yeah, $170.
Yeah.
They're pretty expensive.
And the AirPods. I just read a story today that they're coming back in stock kind of in droves. So it seems like Apple may have caught up on that. But yeah, I have with my AirPods, the only way to control them is Siri. You can tap on them and a double tap activates Siri. You can change that so that a double tap is just play pause. But there's no way to control volume without using Siri. There's no way to control anything else with the content on your phone without Siri because there's no buttons on them. So
right. By the way, John and I tried an experiment a couple of episodes ago after he got his AirPods. And because of the where the microphone is placed on the AirPod, its sound quality is horrible. That's why John's using his wired inline microphone earbuds instead of his AirPods to record now, I bet.
Of course, we tried it with my MacBook. We didn't try it with the iPhone.
That's true. Maybe there's
that might have been a little bit different. But yeah, I will say I've been very happy with the AirPods since we brought them up. They've been the Bluetooth headset that I've kind of been looking for the last few years, mostly because I don't always have to wear both of them. I can kind of switch on and off to whichever one I want. Right. And
Mr. Spock look.
Yeah, well. And they're very nice when walking around, around on campus or something like that. I've not even actually had anyone even comment on them, so maybe that just means nobody looks at me, which is quite possible.
Have you lost one? Yet?
But I've had nope.
Amazing.
Although I did have this fun situation where I had them in a shirt pocket, and I took the shirt off, and I didn't realize it, and they went flying. The case and the AirPods hit the ground. The AirPods went shooting out. Picked it all up, put it back together. Doesn't seem any worse for the wear. So,
well, so that's another product category, right? Is the wearables, and there's been a lot of thrashing about trying to make that work from the Google Glass with smart glasses to the smart watches with the Apple Watch and Android Wear. And now the AirPods and for some people there, I've heard the opinion expressed that the smart Bluetooth ear headset or whatever you want to call it might be the wearable that takes off beyond say a Fitbit or a very specific category type of thing. I think that's yet to be seen, but I guess it's a possibility.
You know, and the other thing I wanted to mention, we were talking about Array microphones earlier, is the biggest problem I've had with Cortana and Windows 10 on the desktop, I don't have a Windows phone anymore, so I won't speak about that, is that very few of my devices have a microphone that Cortana likes.
Oh.
Even on a nice, I have a nice Dell Inspiron 5000 something with a touch screen. It's built for Windows 10, came with Windows 10. Cortana does not like the microphone. On the other hand, I had an Acer Cloudbook on loan last year from Acer for like 2 months. And that thing, Cortana really liked its microphone because it was literally designed for Cortana. And so the problem with Cortana is that, basically, it doesn't have a lot of microphones that it's happy with, at least in my experience. And that's using...
Yeah, Yeah, my desktops, I'm using a Logitech camera up here, and that, and the microphone and that is what she listens to. So
yeah,
that works pretty well, I think.
Microphone, yeah.
Yeah,
but you know, the little microphones that are built into the top of your laptop. Your notebook next to the camera. I've tried a bunch of them. You know, like I tried a Asus tablet I used, a Dell Venue 8 Pro tablet I used. It doesn't like any of those microphones at all.
Hmm.
Yeah, it always warns me, your experience maybe, whatever, because you have a El Cheapo microphone in your tablet. Well, sorry about that. Yeah, it's a very finicky thing. And quite frankly, Siri used to be good. I used to use it quite often, in the car especially, so I could get hands-free. But over time, it's become increasingly stupid. And sometimes when I've been forced to use it to, like, dial the phone, I'm, like, yelling at it in anger. Which is, I understand it's absolutely stupid, but it makes me feel better.
Well, I will sort of... Go ahead.
No, you got to figure that, people building little tablets like the Venue 8 and stuff like that, the microphone wasn't their first thought. Mm. Whereas a phone, the microphone's an integral part of the device.
I agree.
So they probably cheaped out on the microphones on them. Cameras aren't all that great either, so... on the Venue 8. But,
okay, so...
Yeah.
So
surface mic's pretty good.
you would think that there would be a Microsoft certified Ray microphone type of device that's a USB device that you would plug into a PC that would work with Cortana very well, maybe even enable an always on type of thing within, a room wherever your computer was at.
Right.
But I haven't seen anything like
that. Well, the problem is, and this is a whole nother podcast, but podcast topic, but Microsoft has done a horrible job integrating its new features from Windows 10 into anything. So for example, I think only recently have third parties come out with fingerprint sensors that you can plug into your PC. Or, a camera that, Windows Hello requires a very special camera with infrared, which works great on a Surface Pro 4, for example. But if you have a, run-of-the-mill Dell like I do, no, it just doesn't have it.
Surface 3.
Yeah. And it should be easy enough to add on. They've built a whole bunch of cameras before, but they haven't been building these add-on cameras for Windows Hello or Fingerprint Reader or... microphone array, and
you'd think maybe the first thing you'd find, is a Microsoft web camera that's got that in it,
right?
And a Microsoft mouse that's got a fingerprint reader.
That would be perfect, right? A mouse with a fingerprint reader,
yeah,
absolutely perfect. You could even tie it to that PC if you wanted to get really crazy about it, so that mouse couldn't be used with any other PC.
Microsoft. So it's almost like Microsoft is just focusing on their hardware products, like Surface Book and Surface Pro.
Well,
Microsoft makes mice and cameras too.
Yeah.
Well, but that's legacy, right? That they did that before when they weren't in the computer business.
Yeah.
Maybe now that they see themselves as a computer manufacturer, that's where all the focus is going to be.
I don't know. I have a perfectly good Surface Bluetooth mouse. That's what it's called. Yeah. It's only a nice twisty one. So they're still making keyboards and mice specifically for the new stuff. So
yeah, but they're not adding the stuff that we want on.
They're not adding the stuff that we need.
Even a Microsoft keyboard.
New designer keyboard over here that should have a keyboard. I mean fingerprint reader.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. It'd be great, but no. thanks, Microsoft, for annoying us endlessly.
I guess, and this is a weird position for me to be in, I will defend Microsoft.
What?
I'll say that, I know.
Write this down.
I will say that they are doing well with their actual hardware products, and their software is kind of getting better than it's been in probably 10 years, and more cross-platform and more integrated. That's why I'm using a Microsoft Surface Pro 4 now for probably, I'd say, 80 to 90% of my work. At home is really the only place I'm using my MacBook anymore. But those peripherals that they kind of spent the 2000s making from about 2000 to 2010 when they were coming out with the different mice and the different keyboards and webcams and all those things, there was no way that was ever going to make Microsoft trendy, hip, and cool the way that the Surface and the Xbox can do. So I think they are refocusing on being a software company that makes some really good hardware versus being a software company that makes one really good piece of hardware called an Xbox and then a bunch of mediocre peripherals that were hit and miss.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out where Microsoft is going, although they are doing a lot better now that Satya Nadella is the CEO than when Ballmer was there. They certainly seem to be pumping out profits, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's about all I got for this one. Anybody got anything else to add about They Who Cannot Be Named?
Nothing on that, but I will say that next week I should have a couple of updates for us. One, I got the cheap Huawei phone from Freedom Pop Wireless. The whole pay us $30 and then we'll give you this phone and you can activate it and get like 200 megs of wireless data a month and that sort of thing. It hasn't activated yet. It's still searching for signal. I've got to get on the phone with their tech support this weekend.
Oh boy.
But you know what I want. I paid $30 for it.
Yeah.
And on the other note, my MacBook Pro has had some weird issues with File Vault, where if the File Vault is encryption is turned on, the keyboard doesn't work and the mouse doesn't work, and so you can't log in. So I'm actually in the midst of a Time Machine restore, the first time I've ever done a complete one of those. So next week I should be able to report if that is a successful thing or if I ended up having to wipe the whole thing and just rebuild it.
Sorry to
hear that. So I'm teasing future interesting topics.
Okay. And maybe next time I'll talk about the Wi-Fi dongle, the USB dongle I bought for my MacBook Pro, which had a sudden death of its Wi-Fi radio a couple of weeks ago. It's the second one I bought because the first one I bought was terrible. It couldn't get more than like 2 megabits down. And actually, it might have been even worse than that. This one seems to be doing okay. It's got a nice big end. It's got an actual antenna. It's like 3-inch antenna, which is one of the things I found interesting about it, since you don't often see physical antennas on devices anymore. Much, you know, it's too bad because antennas are there for a purpose and they do a good job at what they do. But
I just recently picked up a device called the Mint Box.
Okay,
it's a integrated little maybe 3.5-inch by 2-inch device. It's got Linux Mint, and it's got Wi-Fi. And just I assume because of the size of it, it has two little external speakers. So it almost looks like a little access point sitting on my desk, but it's a computer with two antennae.
That's pretty cool.
So I bought a little short. It looks like a USB stick with an antenna sticking out the end of it that you can stick up and down as a Wi-Fi thing. And I got it because for Miracast, you can't Miracast to a network. You have to Miracast Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi. So if your desktop doesn't have Wi-Fi on it, you can't Miracast to your access point and then have it use the wire to get to the desktop. The device has to have Wi-Fi. So for work, just to show stuff, I stick it in the front of the machine and it sets up a point-to-point wireless to like the Surface of the phone or something like that. So, but it works pretty well. I mean, it's tiny. I mean, it's like a USB plug with a hinge and an antenna. That's it. That's all there is to it.
Wow. I'm just looking at this Mint Box that Frank mentioned. They're really tiny. They're not cheap, but they're really tiny and really powerful. They're like i5s and things like that. It's
Yeah, I've got an AMD based one, so it's a little cheaper priced than it's fanless. It's got like the case is the heatsink, so it's not cool to the touch. It's not the most powerful computer in the world, but it does. It's a decent little box.
Yeah, it's like the size of maybe two matchboxes. It looks like.
Yeah,
pretty decent. Alrighty, folks. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight and talking about They Who Cannot Be Named, even though we named them a couple of
times. Yes.
And thanks for
anybody's go off.
And well, I've got headphones on, so it can't hear us. But
that's true. Yeah.
But and thanks for the tips on backing up or backing up my new PC, since I probably should stop using SyncToy, even though I really like using it. I wish Microsoft would. They killed a whole bunch of like little utilities, I think, recently. But in any case, that wraps up Mobile News Podcast 193. Tata Gasawara, John Westfall, Frank McPherson, Sven Johansson, and we will talk to you another time.